Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touch it up!
The doctor!
Goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What in the hell was that game? What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter. Producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. That game was hands down one of the strangest games that I've ever witnessed. Because it was closely contested through the first half, and the Rockets come out, and they look like they're doing what they're supposed to do. They look like they're about to stomp on the throats of a below 500 team, put them away in the third quarter, and just kind of cruise control to victory in the fourth. And then everything started when Harden had the missed dunk that actually went through the frickin' hoop. I've never seen that before. And a lot of people, you guys included, have never seen that before, where a ball that clearly went through the hoop, then wrapped around with the net because of the force that it was thrown through the hoop, wrapped around with the net, and the referees did not rule it a bucket. And then because of the rigidity of the NBA referee system, they could not simply take the 3 to 5 seconds to go back and look and just confirm that the ball went through the hoop. So because of that, the Rockets lose out on 2 points. Everybody is just befuddled. D'Antoni, the assistant coaches, Harden, everybody's got this one bucket caught up on their mind. And not going to lie, that impacted their ability to focus on the actual game at hand. Because at the time of that happening, they still had a double-digit lead. They were still significantly ahead of the Spurs. That bucket, I hate to say it, it shouldn't have mattered. Because you've got kind of two sides of social media last night where you have one half of Rockets fans saying that that bucket is the reason for the loss. You know, if you had those 2 points, you wouldn't have gone to overtime. All these cases. Sure, you can make that argument. Absolutely. The refs should have done, you know, not done a crappy job and should have counted the bucket. But then you have the other half of people that are saying the collapse should have never happened in the first place. Screw it. You miss out on the 2 points. Big deal. You're still up double digits. You're still facing a below 500 Spurs team, missing their best player in LaMarcus Aldridge. You should have beat them. I tend to lean towards the one on the right. I tend to lean towards the second option because, let's face it, this is a team that has championship aspirations. This is a team that wants to paint itself as a contender. And contenders don't have collapses like this against a below 500 team missing their best player. They just don't. And this was, I think this takes the cake for worst loss of the season, even more so than the Miami loss. Because that Miami loss, you can kind of look at it as it's still much earlier in the season. You're still integrating Westbrook. You're still trying to find the identity of the team. And of course, you have the South Beach curse. And that played a significant part in that game. Plus, it was an early afternoon game. Those are always weird games. This was a normal game in San Antonio against a team that you have no business losing against, a team that is headed straight for the lottery this year. The Spurs are definitely not making the playoffs, and they're ending that streak of theirs. And the Rockets just could not gut out the win. And it's a loss on multiple levels, too, because it's not just a loss in the loss column. It's a loss because you look at your starting players, you look at your entire roster, and PJ Tucker played 52 minutes across the four quarters and double OT. Capella, 45. Westbrook, 48. Harden, 49. Rivers played 40, and then McLemore was next up with 27. You only gave Clemens 11 minutes. Chandler had 7, Cephalosha had 3, and Clark had 8. And I get it. The team is undermanned. You're missing Daniel House. You're missing Eric Gordon. They arguably need to acquire another wing to really shore up the rotation. But then you go and look at the Spurs roster, and you look at their high minute man was DeRozan at 41. Then you've got Forbes at 37, Patty Mills at 36, Lonnie Walker at 35. Oh, sorry, Poeltl had 41. My apologies. Point being is that Popovich spread the minutes around all his young guys. And sure, you can sit here and say that Popovich has a deeper team, or he has more trust in his young players, whatever you want to say, but it's a loss because not only did you actually lose the game in double OT to a below 500 Spurs team, but you racked up an insane amount of minutes across all your critical players. James Harden, who's already hobbling around on that sore left knee, who is getting dinged in the right thigh a couple times last night. Westbrook, who's, you know, battling the dislocated fingers, who's still recovering from the knee scope. He gets, you know, damn near 50 minutes. PJ Tucker, who has no business ever really being above 40 minutes per game. Again, 34-year-old PJ Tucker does not need to play 52 minutes in a double OT loss in early December. It's just, it is maddening that D'Antoni can't simply play the other guys a bit more. And I'm not saying you don't shove in the entire bench lineup all at the same time. You don't put in Clark, Clemens, and Hartenstein didn't play at all either, so there's that too. But you don't throw in all those guys at the same time and just cross your fingers and pray, oh, I hope this, you know, super young lineup doesn't lose us the game. You stagger them in with the rest of the veterans. It's not a hard concept. Chris Clemens, although he went 0 for 3 last night, people are still respecting him as a shooter. They understand that that's what he's in the game to do. This was a rough loss. There is no sugarcoating it. This is a game that you had no business losing, and it was a really rough loss looking at the combined stats of Westbrook and Harden, who just had two really horrible nights. I mean, Harden, sure, he had 50 points, but he had 24 free throw attempts. He did go 24-24 at the charity stripe, which set a record for made free throws, per Jonathan Fagan, I believe. But 4 of 20 from behind the arc, 11 of the 38 overall. Harden played in this game exactly how Harden's critics think he plays, which sucks because this gives them ammunition to then come out and they're going to point fingers at Harden and they're going to say, look at him, you know, he's a volume shooter, he's inefficient, he doesn't get his teammates involved, he only goes to the free throw line, he's not fun to watch play. All of those horrible takes that we're used to hearing over and over on national media, they're just going to play this game on a loop. And it sucks because that gives them more ammunition, that gives them something that they think that they can try to make use of when they're trying to disparage Harden and the great things that he has done. Westbrook coming in, 19 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, triple-double. Woo! He was 4-4 at the foul line, 1 of 6 from behind the arc, and just a really horrible 7 of 30 overall. 7 of 30. That hurts. It's really hard to win a game when your two superstars combine to shoot 18 of 68. Or even worse, 5 of 26 from behind the edge. Just volume numbers for those two guys, and neither one of them really had it in any capacity in this game. We'll keep talking about it. We'll talk about the problem areas. We'll talk about the collapse in the fourth quarter, all of that. But first, a quick message from our friends over at Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. You can start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. Now, if you're listening on the go, if you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, where we are talking about the Rockets' 135-133 loss against the San Antonio Spurs in double overtime, a game that had no business going to double overtime but did. This game really, here's my personal preference. And Ben, the longtime host of this podcast, has his very expressive views about the referees. And I myself share a similar level of views about the refs. However, I have a caveat that I would like to include. I tend to believe that before you start pointing fingers at the referees, you need to be playing close to, if not your best version of basketball. Because unfortunately, the times where other fan bases or the media get upset with the Rockets or any team in general is when you're playing a bad version of basketball, or you're playing poor defense, or your shots just maybe aren't falling, or you have a poor shot selection on offense, whatever. The pieces of the game are just not there. You're not executing flawlessly, or you're not executing to the best of your abilities, and then you start complaining about the referees. Because then at that point, you're not doing everything in your power to execute. And then at that point, if you start complaining about the refs, it's just you can point to this game as a prime example. We can blame the refs, and we absolutely should blame the fact that that ball did not count, and that if the Rockets had had those 2 points, game would not have gone to overtime, or then by association, double overtime. So yes, that is an absolute anomaly that the referees were not able to simply, that three referees missed the ball going through the basket on a clean fast break dunk. So there's that. However, the Rockets still collapsed. They still could not put away this team. You get outscored in the fourth quarter 34-18. You get outscored in overtime 20-18 over the double overtime period. But you just look at this game, and this team, at no point down the line did it really feel like either Westbrook or Harden was going to lead us home. And I said it on Twitter, and this is a take that I'm going to take with me to the grave. Through 2 years with Chris Paul here in Houston, at the end of games, I always wanted the ball in Chris Paul's hand. I'm sorry. James Harden at the end of games, I'm not going to say he's not clutch. That is far from it. Chris Paul just has an aura of control, of safety, of the fact that he has this calming effect on a team as he's orchestrating the offense. And neither Harden nor Westbrook possess that same trait. And I'm a firm believer of that. I'm a firm believer that neither of them has that. And that was what was so critical, especially in that 17-18 season. And we saw some of it in last season as well. But Chris Paul was James Harden's safety valve. Obviously, everything would go through James. The plays would be run for James. James would have the ball the majority of the time. But Chris Paul was that safety valve where it's, hey, we need to get a really high percentage look, whether it's a Chris Paul mid-range jumper, whether it's running a play and using the entire 24-second shot clock and getting an absolutely clean look for somebody like Eric Gordon, or maybe even Harden, or a Clint Capella pick and roll, or a look for PJ in the corner, whatever it was. It just felt like with Chris Paul orchestrating things were going to go smoothly, that everything was going to be all right. At no point in the game last night did I feel safe. Whether it was Harden bringing the ball up the court, whether it was Westbrook bringing the ball up the court, I was ready for an inconvenient turnover. I was ready for a missed shot. I was ready for an offensive foul, all of which we got. And so at some point or another throughout those double overtimes, we got offensive fouls, we got turnovers, and we got poor shot decisions. And it's troublesome because, again, that's not going to change. You can't just implant the basketball IQ of CP3 or the calming effect that he has in either Harden or Westbrook. They are who they are. And regrettably, they are roughly the same player. They're both a ball-dominant guard, capable of scoring in bunches, capable of being the entire offensive system. That's what Westbrook was in OKC after Kevin Durant left. He was doing the James Harden thing that Harden had been doing in Houston for a few years at that point, which was he was the entire offensive system. It was give Westbrook the ball and let him create. Let him run pick and roll. Let him ISO a little bit. Let him get out in transition. And Harden did the same thing. Harden took it to another level as far as the amount of ISOing that he was doing and that continues to do. But Harden's better at it. Harden's the better player. There's no argument there. And so when you have this version of the Rockets where they're trying to replicate it, where you've got Westbrook and you give him the ball and you just expect him to be another version of Harden, but you want him to do it in his own way, which would be the driving to the bucket, creating contact, getting others involved, not settling for three-pointers, not settling for mid-range. That's what you want out of Westbrook, but you're not seeing that consistently yet. You're seeing him settle for mid-range jumpers. You're seeing him settle for three-pointers at times. And it looked like he was trending in the right direction. The past few games, it looked like he was passing up three-pointers. It looked like he was willing to drive the ball in and get others involved, or at least get into the paint before he would send up a floater or, you know, pull up for a jumper, whatever it may be. And maybe this is D'Antoni. Maybe D'Antoni is, you know, barking in Westbrook's ear saying, hey, you need to shoot those threes. If you're open, shoot them. But historically, it's just Westbrook is a 30% three-point shooter, and he's shooting below that average. So yes, he will get closer to that average as the season progresses. Hopefully, fingers crossed, knock on wood, he'll make it back up to his career average. But I still don't think that letting Westbrook settle for wide open three-pointers is your best version of offense, because he will shoot you out of a game. And I don't think there's a big possibility that he's going to shoot you into a game. The threes that he makes are cherries on top of everything else, because you're just not expecting them to go in. So not only was it a woefully inefficient night for the tandem superstar duo in Rockets Red, or in Rockets Black last night, the whole team, you had other great performances from the rest of the team, honestly. You had PJ Tucker, who had 10 points, 2 of 5 from behind the arc, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. PJ did everything that he needed to do and more. Took some charges, played great defense. PJ Tucker did exactly what you wanted him to do. Clint Capella, 22 points, 21 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, a block, or sorry, 2 blocks. 4 of 6 from the charity stripe, 9 of 9, didn't miss a shot. Clint Capella, who was out for close to a week or a little over a week with the upper respiratory infection, the illness that he was facing, he was hospitalized for a day. And for him to come back in his first game back and put up another 20-20 game, Clint Capella has turned it around this season after a very slow start, after a very lethargic start for him, where we were even speculating, okay, how can we trade Clint Capella? How can we upgrade from him, because he's just not going to get it done? He, even with this last 2020 game, has eclipsed, this is 8 games in a row now with 19 or more rebounds, which breaks a record dating back over 50 years in the NBA. It's incredible to think about. Clint Capella has been nothing short of amazing since really getting it together. Ben McLemore, who had to leave the game because he had a cut above his eye, was playing respectable basketball. He finished with 11 points, 3 of 8 shooting from behind the arc. 4 of 9 overall, nothing super fancy. Austin Rivers magically couldn't miss from behind the arc. Austin, literally Ray Allen Rivers, was 5 of 5 from behind the arc at one point. He finished 5 of 6, so he missed his last one. Had a couple free throws, 19 points, all in 40 minutes. I mean, Austin Rivers was playing great. So really, when you look at it, it was pretty much just your two star players who just couldn't get it done. The inefficiency, the inability to close the game out, your role players did exactly what you needed them to do. And right there at the very, very end of double OT, as James Harden got called for an offensive foul, he had PJ Tucker wide open in the corner. Now, would there have been enough time? I think the clock was about 1.5, 1.4 as James was entering the paint. And PJ was wide open. Would there have been enough time for James to pass the ball and PJ to actually get the shot off? Maybe not. Maybe. But in a game where you're struggling mightily from the floor, you and Westbrook, this is why you miss Daniel House. This is why you miss Eric Gordon, because the The Rockets players that they did have, PJ Tucker, a little hesitant at times. Austin Rivers, hesitant to shoot at times, but wasn't hesitant this game. Ben McLemore, he'll pull the trigger. But you needed somebody else to really step up in that specific moment. And it wasn't going to be Rivers or PJ Tucker, unfortunately. They just wouldn't have the ball in their hands. But I feel like Eric Gordon is that guy who in moments like this you trust to take the game-winning shot. You can think of all the times they've drawn up plays for Eric Gordon or even Gerald Green to take these game-winning shots. And without either of those guys there, they just didn't have it. It wasn't the best look to try and win the game. And here's the thing. Here's one of the main takeaways that I want everybody to have from this. James Harden isn't going to have a lot of nights where he shoots 11 of 38 overall. It's just not going to happen. Now, he was 24 of 24 from the line, yeah. But if he shoots even a slightly more respectable shooting percentage, we're talking another 60-point game, maybe a 70-point game. I mean, this was one of those anomaly games from James Harden where he just, it sucks, he didn't have it. And he still somehow managed to drop 50. But he just didn't have it in the sense that he was missing a lot of shots. Spurs were loading up on him. He was settling for a lot of step-back threes and just didn't have it in this game. But that's not going to happen a lot. The Russell Westbrook 7 of 30, I can't guarantee. The Westbrook inefficiency is kind of something we have to deal with. But we've seen the fact that even though Westbrook hasn't been extremely efficient as a Rocket, and we kind of knew that coming into this deal, we knew he was going to be an inefficient guy who was going to impact the game in a variety of ways that Chris Paul no longer could. And we've seen that work to this point because James Harden is so efficient, he kind of balances the two out. But when you have a game where James Harden is 11 of 38 and Westbrook is 7 of 30, that's really hard to win. And that's not going to happen a lot. So that's kind of the silver lining, is James Harden is not going to consistently have games where he's 11 of 38 from the floor. Again, if James even shoots a respectable percentage, his normal shooting percentage, we're talking about a Rockets W right now. And we may very well still talk about a Rockets W down the line. There's hope that the NBA may intervene because of the fact that the officials did come out and say that the ball should have counted, that points were added to the scoreboard. And we'll talk about that in this very next segment in just one moment. All right, and we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, I touched on it briefly at the end of last segment. There is hope. Jonathan Fagan, Tim McMahon, a lot of the media that travels with the team and covers them, have come out and said that there is hope, that a source within the Rockets organization has said that there is hope that they will either challenge the game or protest the game, is the proper terminology, to attempt to have the final 7:52 replayed. However, there's another option where the NBA may just get involved themselves rather than forcing the Rockets to initiate a protest of the game, which would mean the Rockets have to, within 5 days, submit a $10,000 protest fee, which gets refunded to them if they do not successfully win the protest. But they submit a $10,000 fee, they submit any supporting evidence that they may have, the Spurs can also submit any supporting evidence that they have, and then from there, the NBA decides if a replay is needed. So what they would do is they would actually reschedule this game probably the next time these two teams play, and they would play the final 7:52, I think it was, of this game before they would start their next game. And there is precedent for this. This has happened before. It's very rare, and it's very uncommon for this to actually take place. Otherwise, you'd have teams clamoring for protests left and right, and you'd have them saying, oh, well, this thing that happened here shouldn't have happened, and you know we want to play the final 4.5 minutes of this game. No, this is a very uncommon thing to happen. I think, honestly, in the grand scheme of things, it's probably a lot more feasible for the NBA to just step in and say, look, we messed up. The dunk from James Harden should have counted. Therefore, we are awarding the Rockets 2 points in regulation, which would then push the Rockets to a 117-115 win over the Spurs. That would be the simplest way to go about doing it. I'm sure Greg Popovich would be irate if that's what they would do, because then you have double OT, which means absolutely nothing. And essentially the rest of the fourth quarter, which means absolutely nothing, because you can play butterfly effect all you want. You can say, oh, well, if the Rockets had made those 2 points, then they wouldn't have unraveled the way that they did. But they did unravel. They crumpled and they lost the game. So if the NBA does come back and grant them the win, it'll be an absolute blessing, because that's just, you know, one less loss in the loss column, and that's exactly what you need in a Western Conference that is just packed with top-tier competition, which right now the Rockets aren't part of that discussion. They're near the lower end of the Western Conference teams, and it is an 82-game season. You do have a lot more time to continue to gel, to get through this December schedule where you've got a relatively easy schedule, but they're sitting at 13-7 right now. If you take away the loss and you give them another win, then they're at 14-6, tied with the Mavericks. But right now, they're 13-7 until the league office gets involved. Good enough for fifth in the Western Conference, behind, in order, the LA Lakers at 18-3, number one seed, the Clippers at 16-6, the Denver Nuggets at 13-5, and then the Dallas Mavericks at 14-6. So the Nuggets have played a couple less games than the Rockets have, so hopefully maybe they'll pick up another loss or two here. They're on a 2-game skid as we speak. But this Rockets team, for all the championship and postseason aspirations that they have, really had no business losing this game. And there's not much more to go from as far as this loss is concerned. It's going to suck playing in Toronto as I record this Wednesday morning. It's going to be really rough playing in Toronto tomorrow night, Thursday evening, because you travel all the way up north to the great up north from San Antonio to play a surging Toronto team, a team that has played some phenomenal basketball to this date, and you have to deal with playing against them after racking up well over 45 minutes across all your starters. You maybe get Daniel House back. If he travels with the team, he's probably going to play, because you don't make that trek all the way up north from Texas to Toronto if you're not planning to play the game, I don't think. So if Daniel House travels all the way up there, he's probably going to play, probably going to see some action. Maybe they don't play him 40-something minutes like they did Capella in his first game back from this illness. But Daniel House will probably get some burn if he travels with the team, which is a much-needed boost, because, again, you have this game where you basically played a six-man rotation. Let's face it, that's exactly what you did. And the guys were gassed. They were gassed in the first overtime. And then come second overtime, they couldn't cut the mustard. They just could not bring home the win. And again, you should have never been in that position in the first place. Westbrook's inability to keep up with Bryn Forbes was very discouraging. The willingness of the team to switch Clint Capella onto DeMar DeRozan at times, even though I don't want to say DeMar took significant advantage of it, but I'm just not a huge fan of Capella switching out onto perimeter players. It does not bode well, because then he's out on the perimeter instead of being able to secure rebounds. You've got undersized guys, you know, all 6'5 and under, trying to contest for rebounds against Jakob Poeltl, who is maybe not a true 7-footer, but right on par with Capella as far as height and ability to rebound. A lot of things could have been done differently down the stretch. The good news is, it's just one game. That's what I want to try and sign off with today, is it's just one game. It's one game that they might even get the win column. They might even get put back in the win column if the NBA decides to interfere. But it's one game, and it's one game where both your superstars decided to, on the same night, have pretty what will probably be their, respectfully, their worst shooting nights each of the season. 7 of 30 for Westbrook, 11 of 38 for Harden. I don't think we're going to see that again from those guys. Or if we do, it's going to be under similar circumstances in a, you know, double overtime thriller where they are forced to play basically the entire game due to roster issues. And so while this loss is concerning, and while there are a number of things that need to be fixed, the collapse in the fourth quarter, the inability to just lock in and get consistently clean looks on offense so that you can just coast with the scoreboard moving on both ends. All of these things that contributed to this loss, the lack of focus after the missed dunk attempt. Maybe D'Antoni should have just rallied the troops and said, look, guys, we missed the dunk. Who cares? Rather than continuing to berate the officials, because that then kind of shows your players, okay, well, if D'Antoni's caught up in this, if all the assistant coaches are caught up in this, then, you know, we need to be caught up in this too, because Harden and Westbrook continued to talk to the officials about that missed dunk, and they weren't focusing on the game. So maybe you look to D'Antoni, you say he should have handled the situation differently, should have told Harden, look, it sucks, you missed the 2 points, keep playing, focus in on the game. We're still up double digits, you can still win this game, just get out there and play. Somebody whose opinion I'm excited to get about this most recent collapse, as well as where they're kind of sitting now, 13-7 on the season, is Ben Dubose, who will be joining me on tomorrow's podcast, so look out for that. But for this Wednesday morning episode, this is where we break things. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where everything's happening all the time. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Ben is, of course, on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, the website, lockedonrockets.com, and of course, our email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to reach out and communicate. Let us know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. And I check that email every single day. So anybody, if you want to send an email in, if you have concerns about the team, if you have a suggestion for the show, seriously, I check it every single day. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that go straight to your inbox before they are published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Wednesday morning, December 4th episode, this is where we break. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.